call this meeting of the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness to order for Thursday, April 23rd. Our first item of business, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 251. Mr. Administrator?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Senate Bill 251 authorizes and clarifies the authority of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to act without bond as fiduciary for veterans' benefits and receive payment of Social Security and Supplemental Security income benefits on behalf of qualifying veterans and their dependents. Declares emergency effective on passage, passed unanimously out of the Senate Veterans Committee, and passed unanimously on the Senate floor.
Okay, very good. Lori, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Senate Bill 251 is a Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs bill. We put this forward. It's really a technical kind of a change to the statute. It specifically allows us to act as a representative payee or a fiduciary. Currently, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs acts as a conservator for veterans. We also act as a representative payee and a fiduciary for veterans. And we do have the statutory authority. But just as a matter of clarification in the law, I thought it would be helpful if these two functions were specifically called out. There's a little bit of difference between the two. The representative payee is an agency function that comes from the Social Security Administration. So the Social Security Administration appoints ODVA to be the entity that receives the Social Security benefits for the veteran, and then according to what the Social Security Administration wants, makes payments on behalf of the veteran or gives the veteran certain funds out of that or pays their rent out of that and so on. A fiduciary is for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So if a veteran were receiving disability compensation benefits or pension benefits and was unable to handle their own finances, both of these cases are for veterans who cannot handle their own finances, what the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs does is works with a veteran, establishes a very detailed budget on what monies can be spent out of these funds, sends ODVA the check, and then ODVA then pays the bills basically for the veteran and gives the veteran funds, walking around money and things like that, or funds for clothing that they can purchase on their own. We do currently have the statutory authority to do this. We are currently doing these functions. We just wanted the clarification, and we wanted to use the terminology that the federal agencies use for these functions. And that was the purpose of this bill.
Questions? So I have a question. So if they're, I'm trying to understand this term, if they're incapable of managing their finances, that, so wouldn't there be other, so the department in that case helps manage the budget in that, but wouldn't there be other things that might be in jeopardy from the standpoint that they should be receiving support or need guidance on? I'm trying to understand what condition the person would be in that they might just have a problem doing their finances, but wouldn't have other issues, I guess.
Chair Lively, if there are a number of other things that that the veteran needs help with, housing, the agency moves into that role of acting as a conservator.
Okay, that's what I wanted.
Okay, it's a more comprehensive role than just a rep payee role.
Sure. That's right. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that those situations are when we have a veteran that may not have good judgment on spending of money and things of this nature, whereas instead of spending the rent per rent, they spend it elsewhere, things of this nature. And it's usually those kinds of situations. And I believe that even we even take care of some people that, you know, just have a problem with judgment. Am I correct on that?
Chair Lively, Representative Esquivel, yes. The answer is yes. And please understand that it is the, with a representative payee for Social Security Administration or with a fiduciary through U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, it is those federal agencies that make that determination. In the case of a conservatorship, where you're really managing everything for that individual, it is an Oregon state court that appoints a conservator. So it's the courts that appoint a conservator, and when we do conservatorships for them, they do that.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Is it not a fact that before we started this, we had a lot of veterans that had other people in charge of their money, and it didn't work out real well for the veteran?
Chair Lively, Representative Esquivel, I'm not real clear about the history. I can't really speak to the genesis of this. I do know that the agency has been acting as a conservator for veterans for quite a long time. Others, when a lot of our veterans where we act in that role do not have other family members there to be able to help them.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much. You can just stay there since we'll open the next one. Thank you. No further questions. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 251. And I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 252A. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Senate Bill 252A exempts the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs from foreclosure mediation process required of traditional lenders on home loans that are administered by Veterans Affairs. Again, passed unanimously out of the Senate committee and on the Senate floor. No fiscal, no revenue impact.
Very good. Laurie again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Senate Bill 252A is a bill, fundamentally the bill exempts the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs from the requirement to go through the home loan mediation process. In 2013, the legislature passed a law, and which has since been revised and updated, to require mortgage lenders and residential properties to provide homeowners with an opportunity to mediate directly with the lender. And this was because of all of the big problems and issues we had with residential mortgages and residential lenders. And as you know, those loans are sold to third parties, and you know, who really owns the loan, and how do I get in touch with the bank that lent me the money, and so on. So to kind of address all those problems, the legislator came up with that solution. In the statute, it provides that if you do fewer than 175 foreclosures in a year, then you're exempt from this requirement. In the last 6 years, let me go back. I know that you all know this. I'm just putting this on the record, that for about 70 years, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and it was the purpose why it was founded, provides home loans to veterans. So we sell bonds in the open market. We raise money. We use that money to lend to veterans. So we keep the loans. We own the loans, and we service the loans. which is kind of we're in kind of a unique position to do that. At any rate, so if the law says that if you have fewer than 175 foreclosures in a period of 1 year, then you're not required to comply with this law. You're exempt. So I said, okay, how many foreclosures have we done in the last 6 years? I mean, let's just take a chunk of time. And let's see, from 2008 to 2013, we foreclosed on 48 loans and took a deed in lieu on 13. So that's over 6 years. So that's well below this 175 threshold. However, the Oregon Attorney General made a determination last year that for the purposes of this statute, it's in Chapter 86, for the purposes of this statute, all state agencies shall be considered one lender. Well, it's real difficult for us to know, you know, what the thresholds are they being met, and so on. So we've asked for a exemption from this just for ODVA. Sort of in addition to this threshold kind of concept, the other thing is we have some kind of unusual language in our Veterans Home Loan statutes where the legislature has actually set out policy and intent language. And it says specifically in the statute, it is the policy of the state of Oregon that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs shall use all reasonable efforts to keep a veteran in their home. So we are mandated to work with our veterans. We work very closely with our veterans, and it's easy for us because we have a huge amount of flexibility because we own the loan. So we can adjust terms, do all kinds of things to help them. And so to, you know, go through this additional process of mediation on top of that is we go above and beyond what the intent of the mediation statutes are. So the purpose, again, of this particular bill is to ask that the department be exempt from the mediation process.
Question? Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Lori, did you find out aggregate state agency if there was a problem? Do we as a state exceed through housing programs or whatnot, exceed the 175? And the reason I'm drilling down a bit is because I sponsored that bill, and I will be the first to admit that the intent of the mediation was not, ODVA never came up in the conversation as a bad actor. There were two or three large Wall Street banks that were in Oregon,
yes,
creating the mess for folks, not to take personal responsibility away from the homeowners, but I'm just saying that there were some egregious practices going on that we were trying to address. And so I'm going to be, you know, slow to exempt somebody out of it, even though ODVA's record, standing on its own, is exemplar. But aggregate, what are we looking at?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, I did not gather that data. I did not gather that information. Part of it was going to be so hard for us as the state agencies to make a determination, you know, what other state agencies have this, to what extent do they do foreclosures. And, you know, I just felt that because our statute so specifically required us to work with veterans, not just, you know, go through a nice mediation process and see if we could come to some different terms, but to try to keep veterans in their home is an additional kind of a step that's required of us that, I was not looking to try to do a grand exemption for the state of Oregon. I was just trying to work with our Veterans Home Loan Program. So I didn't find that out, sir.
Sure, follow up. And, you know, I don't want to be real hard on this, but I'm assuming that because of the numbers, that ODVA hasn't had to do any mediation then, other than what you're required to do by other laws around the home loan program, but under the bill that you had addressed on mandatory mediation for foreclosure, you haven't had to do any mediation because your numbers are so low. Is that correct?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, no, the agency has participated in several mediations because we're required to under this law. We have done several of them in the past 18 months to 2 years.
Follow up?
Sure.
Even though you're well below the 175 threshold?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, yes, it's because the Attorney General has stated that we are part of the state of Oregon, and so our numbers individually for the department, that's not the threshold that needs to be considered. The threshold that needs to be considered for those 175 loans is any state agency in Oregon that forecloses on properties.
So the Attorney General is either has numbers or is just assuming that the aggregate for state agencies is at least or greater than 175. They're just assuming that without.
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, it's not the information I have that they've made any kind of assumption about that. They just scooped all the agencies in and said, you're all part of this. And in light of that, then we knew that we would have to, either as a very small little state agency, try to communicate with all the other agencies and say, where are you? Do you exceed this? Do you not exceed this? And it was kind of a bridge too far. And I just said, let's get ODVA exempt. We have a very straightforward, this is one of the principal things that this agency does, is home loans for veterans. And let's just get this real narrow carve out. The other carve out would have to be for the entire state of Oregon. And I, that was going to be kind of a ginormous task, and I didn't want to go there.
Yes, it would. Mr. Chair, one more.
Certainly.
Lori, can you get the committee, let us know in the last, 13, 14, and so far in 15, how many mediations ODVA has done and what the fiscal has been each year on those mediations for us, so we can see the enormity of the problem?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, I'd be delighted to. I can tell you one that I that just happened in the last 4 or 5 months. It requires the mediation requires an in-person individual. So our home loan manager went to Grants Pass or Medford, I can't quite recall. All in it, because there are fees for the mediation in addition, I think it was about $1,100 or $1,200 for that one mediation. But I will get you those figures, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Just follow-up comment. I'll have to think about this, and I'll look at the numbers. And I guess my fear is, I don't want it to be a slippery slope, because we passed the bill for a purpose. And though I agree with you, I am concerned about a slippery slope. I'll have to think through on that, Mr. Chair. State chartered credit unions may come in and go, well, we have so few, we'd like a carve out, and so that's where I'm thinking. Sorry, Lori.
Other questions? Representative Evans.
Chair Lively, perhaps, if not one way, then another, is This was just an attorney general finding, right? Could there be statutory clarification that ODVA does not count for something? So instead of exempting, you're just telling the attorney general not to count it in the numbers.
They stand on their own instead of aggregate.
Just don't say the word exempt so you don't start the rush to exemptions. But you
Mr. Chair, could we gut and stuff and do a task force to study?
I was waiting for that.
Task force.
Not my idea. That what you said? Maureen seems to be maybe
Oh, she supports it. Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Escobar, did you have?
Yes. This is a mediation that's required. Are we talking about foreclosures? Is that what we're talking about? And I want to ask a question here because my mother had a reverse mortgage. Okay. Well, my mother had to leave the house because of health. So then we tried to turn it back over to the people, and we gave them a deed in lieu of foreclosure. They waited around 3 months on that, messed around with it, and then said we had to do other things, which they never told us. But anyway, to make a long story short, they messed this whole thing up to the point of where now they're doing a foreclosure on her. But I just got this mediation thing in on her, and they wanted her to pay $350 to go in and have a mediation.
That's crazy.
I hope we aren't doing that to the veterans. I don't mean the messing around part, but I'm talking about the $350 because if they're charging $350 every time people go in for a mediation, that's kind of troubling because they don't have any money in the first place.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Laurie. Chair Lively, Representative Esquivel, and perhaps Representative Huffman will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but mediation is not something that can be required of a homeowner. A homeowner opts into mediation. And my understanding of the foreclosure mediation program is that it is, it's confusing to me that scenario where a bank is requiring a homeowner to participate in a mediation, because it's my understanding of the law that the mediation is voluntary, and if the homeowner wants it, the bank has to participate. But if the homeowner doesn't want it, the homeowner can opt out.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify that. No, it was one of those, if we don't hear from you by such and such a date, we'll assume you don't want it.
Uh-huh.
So. But I mean, is the $350, they never explained what that was for. I assumed it was for the mediator, or is that separate? That's what bothered me about this whole, and this, the only reason this came to light is because they had messed this whole thing up, but I was wondering if that's what we're doing to people that are losing their homes too. I didn't understand
that. Less than an attorney.
Do you have an answer for that, Representative Huffman?
Yeah. Attorney Huffman?
All I know is since we passed the law, judicial foreclosures have dramatically stopped, and I haven't gotten any constituent complaints about the mediation process, and I've actually gotten feedback, I think all of us did, got a report on the success of the mediation from partnership in Central Oregon and the other partners that are doing the mediation services.
By the way, this has been dragging on for a year now.
That's an interesting point, though, about if there is a fee involved, that the person that has the mortgage that they may be foreclosing on is going through mediation.
I will say, Representative, that give Allison McIntosh a call at Housing, because she hooked up a constituent of mine in Central Oregon that it's been a little over 4 years and the bank will not foreclose. And so she got them involved with the mediation folks so that they could try to push the bank. I mean, that's a part of it. So Allison
McIntosh. The constituent got to stay in the house for 4 years.
No, they moved out because they were forced into bankruptcy.
They should have stayed right there because they'd have had 4 years rent free.
They were trying to do the right thing,
I understand
you guys.
Yeah.
deed in lieu of foreclosure.
No good deed goes.
Any other questions? Thanks for bringing us up, Lori. We were just looking for something.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Lori? Thank you. So, Mr. Huffman, I just want to warn you that this committee has quite a track record to date of pretty well just moving things along and agreeing. So while you have certainly have time to think about your approach to this, I just don't want to put any pressure on you.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I would like to say that I think, you know, Representative Evans, maybe not a task force, but maybe we could have an informal group get together with the department and see if maybe there might be even a narrower approach. Accomplish.
We can analyze until we paralyze. What do you think?
If that's what you want to do, I'll play out. I'm here to serve.
I'm going to close the public hearing.
I think you better.
Yeah. On 252A, it appears we have some more discussion we're going to have around this particular item. Though it would be interesting, Representative Huff, from my standpoint, when you were talking about that, is how much, you know, what other state agencies in that, so how large may that be, the problem be from a standpoint of the states, overall states, versus what the Attorney General said. I don't know how we get that information, but it would be interesting to know. Okay, so additional business. So you have in front of you, so we've talked that we're going to have a conversation about prioritizing the bills that are down to Joint Ways and Means. So Brian has prepared quite a bit of information, and what I'm going to suggest we do is people take this. So we're going to talk about two things when talking about prioritization. One, just prioritization, regardless of the fiscal. Because there may be a difference. I don't want to first is make sure we don't have a chance to talk about priorities, because fiscal sometimes may direct us to a certain direction that may not be where we really want to go from a policy standpoint. So we'll talk about it from a standpoint of just overall policies, what are the kind of the most important ones, and then talk about it from the standpoint of the fiscals, and that out of those two conversations, then come back and say, okay, what I told the speaker yesterday we would do is once we've done that, then we'd provide that information to Ways and Means from this committee, that given the choices you have, here's what we think are the most important policy questions we want to address. And while we appreciate they have fiscals attached, this is kind of the order in which we would like to have them considered. Representative Perry.
Chair, I would like to see this same type of document drawn up, and not to make Brian have to do more work, but for bills that went to revenue. They'll eventually have a fiscal impact, but I think they need to be mixed into this for prioritization purposes. Because I think we have at least three or four that sort of went off the revenue.
Do you want these returned back?
No. So what we decide to do, given the time we're under right now, is that you take that information so you have it. So then once you've taken a look at the information, if you have other questions or information you need for us to enter in that conversation, because some of these has been quite a while since we talked about them here at the committee. So just to make sure what we've got the list is, and so if there's additional information you need when we're going to enter into that conversation, you get that to us so we can do it. But I like the idea of revenue.
You get it as we include stuff.
Good idea. Mr. Chair, do we have, is our plan to eventually, once we talk about this, then present a package request to Ways and Means?
Yes. Not from a standpoint of a dollar package, but a standpoint of priorities.
Yeah.
If we're saying these are our highest that we think would be the most effective, should get through.
And Paula, do we have any idea, I don't know who all's on, but any idea how much money we're looking at that's available?
And so, while we might talk about, that's not my intent here. Okay. My intent is not to presuppose what we might, what my intent is to try to make as strong an argument as we can make as a committee the importance of some of these and why they should receive higher consideration for funding.
Okay.
Representative Parrish,
my follow-up is that I continue to sort of struggle with both agencies and LFO on the generation of fiscals, and I'm going to argue and go, I'll chase mine own on my bill, but that $322,000 to do this healthcare piece for 35 to 40 veterans is probably not the right fiscal, because it came attached with it, if you recall, to staff people at ODVA to make that work. Like, seriously, I'll just walk you down to the health authority and sign you up for a CCO. I mean, that there's nothing that needs two people there. So I'm going to go and at least on my own challenge it. But I bring that up because I'm on Human Services, where so is Representative Evans and Representative Peluso, and we've had a boodle of task force bills where the agency has just said, oh, we'll just absorb the fiscal so that, and it's part of our regular budget so we can do the work. Now, that inconsistency between agencies and the fiscal office is very problematic because then you take something that, like, as I think this one's maybe one of Representative Evans, you know, establishes a task force on housing for veterans at $102,000. I mean, that is problematic to me that we've got one agency says, I'll absorb a work group because they maybe want to do the work. And I'm not saying the Department of Veterans Affairs didn't want to do the work, but one agency says, we want to do the work so we won't put a crazy fiscal on it so it can get through the process and maybe even just get straight to the floor without going to Ways and Means versus one that suddenly gets a really high price tag, $102,000 to run a task force when I've been doing the ABC work group for free with no fiscal because we just sort of showed up and did the work is really bothersome to me. And I think we need to, as members, push back on some of these stupid task force costs because they are all over the map.
So, Representative Evans.
A comment and a request. I'll start with a request.
Okay.
Do you want a veterans list and an emergency preparedness list? Because in some cases, I'm not. Do you want one list or two? Really?
I want because one list. Is
one
what
list.
I want.
Okay.
Yeah.
So out of.
But
the,
I understand there are in both areas. But I mean, right.
Okay. And then the second thing is, I not surprisingly, I think you probably share some of the concerns I expressed very clearly to the director of ODVA recently. About the inconsistencies in some of these fiscals, and hopefully, I really appreciate your approach as far as what we think needs to be done. We'll fight through the money afterwards, right. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to illustrate what Representative Parrish is saying, you know, when you're in the building for a long time, you have these thoughts that, gee, we've done this before. And I remember very vividly, remember when we pushed 2 years ago to get veterans in-state tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the fiscal came back
outrageous.
For that 2 years prior to that was $7,300 per veteran per year. Then we had the children that were here illegally to go to school and the fiscal was zero. Now that showed me that we have a problem because it's the same, it's the apple and the orange, but yet there was a fiscal on one and there was a zero fiscal on the other. I've seen it over and over again in different departments, and there's no specific department that does it. I don't know if it's a whim or if they don't want to do it or what. I haven't figured it out, but it's very inconsistent. I can show you task force, Evans task force, that are under $50,000 that we just popped through.
So it's... Let me tell you, I support what your question is. I'm not sure exactly what authority I have as a chair or not, but I'm more than willing this committee to express some concerns and deliver mm-hmm. those concerns as a committee back to others, because I've heard this from others besides just this committee. It is problematic, mm-hmm. and I think that's very legitimate when we're talking about doing these things. And so we can form some key questions about why and examples, and I'm more than willing to carry those back on behalf of the committee to the powers that be and say, this isn't making sense to us, and we need to...
Could the chair have the latitude to request that the department come in and explain an excessively high fiscal in front of the committee?
I think the chair has latitude to do most anything until I get told not to do it. But that should be part of our conversation.
I think
if that's what
be.
The committee wants to do, I respect the right to do that.
And Chair Lively, I'll add to that, because especially when we see the list that looks like this, you know, when you're going through the process and bills are spread over several days, you don't actually... I mean, I really appreciate the work that went into this document that sort of brought this all together, because now you get to sort of line up and
right.
go, well, wait, one has this fiscal and one has that fiscal. And ultimately, you know, I mean, you're going to be doing a lot of the same work. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The other piece to Representative Esquivel's point, and I voted on both of those bills. I voted on the one for the children and I voted on the one for the veterans. But yes, I've seen the first year that I was, you know, tried to do it and have this crazy fiscal and we can't do this and it's just going to burn down the higher ed budget if we do it. And then, you know, we're going to do this for this really wide universe of kids, and that's great. But I supported that too. I'm an immigrant's kid. I'll support that. And then come back in that same year because this body made a decision over here that, you know, feels good for lots of reasons that we won't... But right, this is the population we want to, some people in the building want to serve, that's great. And then, so to try to make that equal, then we come back in the subsequent year, and even the follow-up with the master's degree, and suddenly there's no fiscal again. I mean, it's, This is the fifth session of running my head up against the wall on this, and others have been here longer doing this thing, but it makes no darn sense to see, when you look at it like this, organized like this, there's no sense.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm just looking, boom. While you were talking, both House Bill 2270 and 3479, the one 2270 really is going to be a person, a policy right. advisor, and the other one's going to be a coordinator position. So they're each one person and probably a little bit of support, you know, but they're not widely disparaging numbers, but there should be a range or something for a kind of position, I'm guessing, but maybe there isn't. I don't know.
Representative Boone, notice that our goal is possibly to hire a woman for that position, so when you get into the pay equity piece.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe the 3479 okay. has a lower
See, this is the reason they don't let policy committees talk about this stuff, because you have all yeah. these questions.
And don't forget we passed the ERA, folks, statewide.
So we better bump that fiscal on the one up. Yeah.
Did you want us to do absolutely. Every one of these in a prioritization, or just
yep.
maybe the top 10, or...
Well,
and let the rest of them blow.
Well, and I'm fine. So we can talk about that. Is we need to get at least a top 10. I mean, if we can't okay. after that, but we need to decide what are our highest.
So there's only 12. So let's
yeah,
do 12.
So but when we add the revenue, it'll be a few more. But again, I respect this conversation that we should be having, asking these questions. And again, as your chair, I will. If we want to have some more in-depth conversations with department specific about it, I think that's legitimate for us to ask those questions. So
lastly, and maybe it's a question for the King of Task Force and not you, but you know, given that we have several task force that the representative from the task force district brought us, that and while they have slightly different missions, mm-hmm. they're going to have a lot of the same players.
Oh, that's
so is there really the possibility that oh. we can go take some time maybe on this committee and sort of parse through that? If we need to make some amendments to any of those bills while they're down in Ways and Means, mm-hmm. so that we're not trying to drag the same group of people to five, you know, three or four different, or however many task force, different ones, that maybe that there is some scope to do some consolidation mm-hmm. to get those fiscals down so that we can actually still get the work done. Because you're still going to have a member of the House and a member of the Senate and all the members who are on there. A lot of those are going to be really similar. So to the extent that that sort of becomes an omnibus task force to deal with some of these things, and we can break down some of that cost so that, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to send all this stuff to Ways and Means, and I'll just basically be cranking at people who are not on this committee who, you know, don't care about these things necessarily the way we do, is they're going to go to Ways and Means and not be prioritized. So to the extent that we can be really smart about how we prioritize and try to get the work done with the dollars we don't have because they're not going to give them to us, I think is really important, so that even if it is just a task force bill and it costs $102,000, that it doesn't die because the work's important. And particularly when you overlay the work that Human Services is doing, is there a way we can sort of hitch our wagons on some of the housing stuff that's happening out of Human Services Committee? But also, we raised a document recording fee for $5 for veterans. Is there a mechanism to tap a little of that to help offset the work to study the housing piece? Maybe we need to go check that out too. I'm just saying, I think we have to go down to our Ways and Means counterparts and make them sharpen their pencil and be smart with the resources so that we can get our work done, because historically this committee is not getting the work done, not because we don't care, we're sending it down, it's our colleagues with the checkbooks who aren't, you know, making the funds available.
So, Representative Huffman, the question I have, from a timing standpoint, it's going to take us a meeting or two to get through all this, and I'm not familiar enough with how things get scheduled through Ways and Means and that, whether we legitimately are going to have enough time to have an influence or not.
Yeah, we've got a week, Mr. Chair. That's not a problem. some of the subcommittees, the Ed sub this morning moved out two of the fee agencies. So we're just starting,
okay.
and I think that's pretty broad in the subcommittees, just starting to move out this week. We're at the end of this week. So next week, the small agency budgets.
Okay, so we've got time to.
And, you know, I mean, we're largely waiting on the May revenue forecast.
Right.
So, but there are a bunch of bills that have been sent to Rules, Revenue, and Ways and Means, and I seriously doubt that all of them will have time to be heard.
Right.
So it's very important to be the loud voice.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Can I ask Representative Huffman a question on procedures and Ways and Means?
Yes, you can.
Why don't we, in Ways and Means, go ahead and put these budgets out, and then after the May forecast, do an addendum, amendment to them?
Because then you have
I'm making
493 advocacy groups saying, you said,
yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say anything to them. I'd say, this is the first budget, and that's that, and we'll see what happens in May.
It's in a boom.
Something that came up in Coastal Caucus this morning was the fact that sometimes we are busy passing, passing bills that ask agencies in particular to do something. A report, a study, or something like that, which then piles that onto their regular workload and ultimately can cost money. And maybe if we're thinking of these things in terms of, well, if we did, you know, what Julie was saying, you know, maybe combine some of the tasks of the task forces if it's applicable, like housing and whatever, and be cognizant of that and say, well, that we, some of us in policy committees know this is coming down the pike and it's going to add to this, blah, blah, blah. And just try to fit it together with what we have, information we have. I think we'll come across as a pretty credible group, you know, because we'll be able to make our prioritized list make sense to Ways and Means, because that's what I've been told, is that, you know, they're all going to go down and be in the cauldron, you know, down there. And if you have the right, you know, sieve, you can pull it out, you know. Keep your eye on it and see that little red thing and you pull it out, you know.
You down there, I'm sure that's how they do it. There, Mr.
But you're right. Some, you know, at the end of the day, the cauldron's going to be emptied out and there's going to be a bunch of sludge in the bottom.
Our stuff's going to be swirling in the bottom.
So if we can make it make sense and also collaborate with our friends and, you know, be efficient in our use of the money, I think we'll have a better chance.
I guess what amazes me is the lack of sense, common sense, on procedures. Example, we have a certain entity in this building that 60% of their people, certain group of people they use, they farm out to different entities like counties or different departments and stuff like that, but they don't backcharge them. And so consequently,
That's what we're
now we have
about.
To pass a bill to tell them to backcharge them. I'm just amazed.
I think we've probably opened a can of worms here. Maybe we don't want to have this conversation.
Maybe we should turn into Ways and Means.
That's right. So, yes.
I don't want to talk about Ways and Means, but one other thing.
Okay.
Thank you. So, Rep. Evans and I were down on Saturday for the Walk a Mile event, and Dave Stuckey was there joining us, and my emergency management buddy, I'm forgetting your name.
Sean.
And Sean was there. We had a fair turnout on a very glorious day, and so I am a firm believer that you get the first one done and it will continue to grow. It was great to see representation from our Oregon National Guard and from the SARA team at Willamette, and so it was a very nice event.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
So we
did
weren't,
you walk the mile?
I did.
Scheduled necessarily next week to meet on Tuesday, but we can.
Correct.
So I would suggest we do and start this conversation to see if there's other information. But hopefully you'll have time over the weekend to look at this. And we'll
here
get
goes
to the stuff.
My tea time.
I was just going to say, before you hang that thing down, I think young Mr. Stuckey should be introduced, because he's sitting on the bench with the big boys, you know, the crows in the back.
Absolutely. We'll try not to embarrass him, though.
Not that we know you're there.
This is my youngest son, Kyle, who's happily not going to school today. And so he came to join us at the military to come down here. So he's had a fun time today.
Thank
he's
you for joining us.
There you go. Nice to meet you.
My suggestions for when we meet, you know, one, bring this stuff back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two, drag the department back in here. And also bring somebody from LFO in here, so we spend our time prepared to how we sharpen the pencil and ask for I don't know if there is a procedural process to ask for new fiscals or to be able to make an addendum to the fiscals, so that then they have actual real data that Ways and Means can use to make the changes. And everybody who's got a task force in here should figure out how we can do some consolidation. But I'd like to hear from the fiscal office along with the department and say, Okay.
That was amazing.
We're all going to sit here for the next hour and sharpen our pencils
and solve
this.
But I think we'll have the conversations and figure it out.
Yep.
That's best we do. Sure. Thank you. So we need to go back to the floor, so.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's right.
I just had a little heart attack. Thank you. I just had a little heart attack. Thank you.
That's right.
Oh, that's